Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shea's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Yes, welcome to BJ Shea's Geek Nation. I am the Reverend Enfuego. Across from me is Vicky Barcelona.
Yellow.
We've got the show's namesake, BJ Shea.
Aha!
Aha! And running the boards is Joey Deez.
Wah.
Ah, Waluigi's back. I love it. On today's show, we will get TV talk with BJ about The Flash. We will also talk board games with BJ giving his reviews about some of his favorite things. And then we will actually get into talking about board games and whether or not you should play below your level. And maybe let some people win for once in a while.
Okay.
And of course, we'll get to the Geek Sheet with Vicky B. Vicky, how can people get a hold of us?
Get a hold of us via our website, bjgeeknation.com. Give a blood, sweat, and more. Or just Google or search BJ Shea's Geek Nation on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, iTunes. I'm getting all screwed up because we have the new Odyssey. It used to be radio.com app. It is now Odyssey.
Yes.
If you already A-U-D-A-C-Y.
If you already had it, it flipped over, so check it out if you haven't.
Exactly. Lots of ways to get a hold of us. You can always shoot us an email, bjgeeknation@gmail.com. Give us some reviews of some of the things you've checked out, or maybe you want to get some input on some of the things that Vicky talks about for her Geek Sheet. You can do that. One of the things that we need to do is get some input about one of the shows that's been around for a long time and is still continuing to go fast. It's the CW The Flash, and BJ is still all in on it, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a show that I watch with my daughter, and I mean, after, you know, skillion seasons, it's like, okay, what are they going to do? You know, they've got You know, it's tough, and a hero that can basically run as fast as he is, you got to find ways to somehow give him things that are tough to deal with. This season, it's been disjointed. They basically ended last season, this season, if you will, and now we're onto a whole new situation where they got these forces of nature, including the Speed Force, which is what supposedly gives Barry his power, and she's manifest in the physical incarnation of his mother.
Whoa.
So that's a weird thing. But they, you know, it's funny. You can tell when somebody needs a day off because they basically, there was no Flash in this episode.
Oh.
It's like, oh yeah, Barry's healing. Okay, he needed a day off. So
that reminds me of the story of the reason why they had Superman get injured by kryptonite was literally because of the old radio plays. And I think it was George Reeves who was playing him, George Reeve, I believe. And he just needed some days off. And so they're just like, well, yeah, he's kind of out of it right now. Kryptonite got him. And so he could actually take some days off and have some of these with the secondary characters taking the limelight.
Yeah, it's something they do in soap operas because they, you know, those are every day. And it's like, well, when does someone take a vacation? Well, Jimmy's going on a business trip, you see? So they basically, and they, you know, they've got a lot of cool stuff going on. The big thing is that Killer Frost, who used to be basically a manifestation of Caitlin Snow, she's now two separate characters. Somehow, some way, something happened where Caitlin and now Killer Frost exist independently from each other.
Played by the same actress?
Yeah, and actually, I will say that Danielle Panabaker is doing she's doing a great job because as they're in the same scene together, and I think, you know, after Orphan Black, everyone's like, I want to play multiple characters on screen at the same time, so I get an Emmy. And Danielle's doing a nice job with that as they're trying to figure out how to live in the same place, and they definitely have different personalities. But they went back in the past, and the cool thing about this episode, they went back to the 90s, was just a different fashion. And I have to say that, and then they ended up going back to different parts of the past sort of bled into their lives, so they... The only thing that seemed to change was their wardrobes, but okay, you know, they're still in the same Star Labs, but somehow they went from wearing current outfits to something from the 70s or from the 60s, and I will say that Iris, who's played by Candace Patton, she looked really, really good. Like they put 60s fashion on her, or it might have been 70s fashion on her and 60s fashion on Danielle, the Caitlin Snow character, and they both really rocked it well. It's like, all right, these guys would have looked really good in that time. They fit in perfectly. Whereas Cisco, he was dressed like a dude from the 90s, and it was like, well, I don't know about that, but you know. And there's a new guy named Chester, and he played by Brandon McKnight. And he had a pretty cool story about his dad. And it was a really, you know, I have to say, it was a good story about a dude that, you know, didn't know what his dad's intentions were, and he always thought his dad didn't care about him, but he got to go back in time and see that that wasn't the case. So it was a nice one-off episode. It really, I don't know how much it really forwarded the story arc, but it was a good one, and it also featured this new dude, Chester, which was nice, and now he and Cisco are the brains, and they call themselves Chesco, which I don't know, if, you know, if that's a sort of like J-Lo kind of thing we need, but we got it.
Chesco, in at least in Mexican slang, is it's a slang for soda.
Huh.
So I don't know.
Oh, really?
I don't know if that has any relevance or anything.
Don't know if they're soda people. They're just sort of just like they're the team. They're a team now. So Chester and Cisco, Chesco.
Yeah, yeah. Just mushing them all together. It's
you
better.
Wanna, you want a Chesco?
It's better than Katniss and PETA, which turned into cat pee.
Oh. So you know, yeah, you're right.
Anything's better than that one.
Good point.
Keeping you here, BJ. We do need to talk about some board games.
Board games.
You weren't here last week because I just assumed that you're playing board games. You know, doing that show prep and research.
Oh yeah, sure, that's it.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that was research. Yes, that's what it was.
So we figure we would get you a couple of board games that you've either been playing or that you want to highlight. What do you got for us?
Well, it's been a while since I've been able to talk about this because so many other things came out, but Dune, we're all excited for that new version of Dune to come out.
Hell yeah.
You know, which will be released on HBO Max. I'm excited about that. So even if I'm not able to go to a theater, I'll get to watch it. And I think they probably, the people that made this game was hoping the movie would have been released a little sooner. Dune Imperium. This is not the old Dune game that was reskinned and redone, which at some point was also Twilight Imperium Rex. This is a whole different game, and it does find like their inspiration and elements from characters from the Dune Legacy, as well as from the new film and also the series that Frank Herbert wrote. So they really, you know, they were like, well, we hope it's out. But of course, I was like, is it a good game? I am not a fan of the old Dune game, was not a real fan of the Twilight Imperium Rex game. So it was going to take a lot for me to sit down and play a Dune game because I just didn't like the other ones. Turns out, it's a good thing I sat down and played this. This is a really good game. There's worker placement. There's variable player powers. There's deck building, bag building, pool building. Card play. Yeah, there's a lot you can do in this game, and it's got a good, you know, flavor of it. And it is a really good game. You know, Lost Ruins of Arnak came out at the same time as this, and they were both worker placement games. One sort of like Indiana Jones style, and the other one based in the Dune universe. And after a while, a lot of us were like, you know what? We thought we'd like the Indiana Jones ones better, and even though Arnak is good, we're like, Dune Imperium is really a good game. And it's got 8.4 on BGG,
wow.
And it's very replayable, and it's easy to learn as far as placing your workers, but then you have a cool way that you have conflict in the game, so you do get to fight each other, and each house has its own special way it can reward you, and there's a deck-building mechanic in a way that actually is kind of cool, and there's a lot going on in this game. That's what's going on with board games now. I tell you, I'm clearing out my collection because it's like, you know, I got this worker placement game. I got this deck building game. Oh, I could play. Or there's Dune that does both.
I was going to ask on that. Do you feel that just because you're a more seasoned gamer, you've played a whole bunch of different board games, that the fact that it's not that confusing to combine these aspects now? Or do you think that this is something accessible to a newer player?
That's a really good question. I feel like you always should have at least like games that would be easy for new people to get into. And we've had this debate before.
Yeah.
So I will keep some, like I will probably keep Star Realms because that's, I like science fiction and that's a deck builder. But I'm looking at Ascension over here. And I remember Joey Dee's played Ascension for the longest time.
I love that game.
Yeah. And I'm afraid, you know, Rev Ascension's been replaced. It's just, you know, just like Dominion, pretty much the original deck builder. A lot of people don't believe it's been replaced. I do. I mean, everyone, you know, Tom Vassell recently did a thing saying, oh, yeah, a game that you should at least try one time. I agree. You probably should try Dominion one time, but then you're probably not going to want to play it again because there's just so many better deck builders out there, in my opinion. And that's the same thing with Ascension. It was, the artwork was really cool, though some people hated it. The idea of it was really cool, but As a matter of fact, there's a game called Shards of Infinity, which we bought for Vicky. And, you know, Vicky's definitely an old schooler when it comes to these games. And even she was like, oh, yeah, this is actually, I like this game because it does a little bit more than Ascension does. And that's kind of what's happening, Rev. I think if you're an experienced gamer, these games come out and you realize, oh, yeah, my brain can do both. I know how to play a worker placement. I know how to play deck builder. Why wouldn't I play a game that gives me both of those? And so you'll probably keep some basic game, but you won't keep them all.
Yeah.
And like I'll keep Lords of Waterdeep because that is a good worker placement game.
I love that game so much.
There are people that tell you that Kalos is a great game, but which is the grandfather of worker placement, I guess. But I play Kalos a lot. Don't like it that much.
I've played Kalos exactly once, and it was in a tournament atmosphere. So that's pretty much why I hate it. it's one of those ones where I didn't win, so I hate the game.
Yeah, it's a great look. It's a good game. I get it, but I just like Lords of Waterdeep better, probably because I just like that universe better.
Oh, absolutely. And I think fans of Dune will love this one as well. I love that. What else do you have for us in terms of board games?
Well, I'll tell you right now, when you go to cons or you're traveling, you know, you really want to play a great game, but you got no room to store it. And if the board game library at the con you're at isn't that good or they're fresh out of what you want, you're screwed. So you always like to bring some of your own stuff.
Yeah.
And portability and playability, those are big things, and the Tiny Epic games definitely deliver on that. You know, I like Tiny Epic Quest, I like Tiny Epic Galaxies, Tiny Epic Western was a fun game, and there's two new games that are about to come out, actually, or at least the one recently just got delivered, and the other one is about, I also got delivered too, is now that I think about it, because my copy's waiting for me at Zulu's.
Nice.
Tiny Epic Dinosaurs, I'll tell you about, and then later we'll talk about Tiny Epic Pirates, which I haven't got it in my hands yet, so I can't really tell you how it plays, but it did get released.
I think you said one of my favorite words there. Dinosaurs.
Yes. Yes. Well, and Vicky likes pirates, so I said one of her favorite words. Well, Tiny Epic Dinosaurs is, in fact, a real fun game, but boy, oh boy, it is spatial. And,
you're not very good with those games.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because they call it the enclosure mechanic, which it's true. You have to enclose your dinosaurs, and you've got five different types of dinosaurs, I believe, and four of them must be enclosed or they'll run away, and if they run away, they will do bad things to you and your food and your other dinosaurs because they'll eat other dinosaurs or they'll take all your food.
I've seen Jurassic Park. I know how this works.
Yeah, so that's, and then you've got some special dinosaurs that, you don't have to enclose them. They won't run away, but then again, you still can't leave them with the regular dinosaurs. So, but it's a real fun game where you basically are acquiring dinosaurs so that you can then sell them to people.
Interesting.
This game has not learned from Jurassic Park. It's not a good idea to try to commoditize these guys. They eventually will cause havoc, and we're the ones that have to keep them enclosed. And if we don't do a good enough job, that will impact our game. But basically, we are getting points by giving the dinosaurs to the people that want them. They go, hey, listen, we want a Stegosaurus, we want a Slaposaurus, we want this. And if you deliver them, you will get points. And you also have secret objectives that you have to accomplish. And in this game, it's interesting because you can't accomplish a secret objective unless you accomplish a public objective. So you really have to save up your dinosaurs in order to do both at one time, because the only time you can do a secret is when you do a public. And you're like, oh my gosh, I don't have the space. Where am I going to? I've got these big fields that I'm putting them in, and everybody has a different sort of enclosure board in there, and so it's a little different how you're going to keep your dinosaurs, and there are scientific accomplishments you can get, and there'll tech cards that will help you, and it's a fun game, and it's tough for me, but the people I play with did like the game, and you know, it takes about 45 minutes, 1 to 4 players, and of course the price is always right, because they're usually like, I mean, really, like between $20 and $30 depending on where you go, and they're small, so you really, you know, they've done a good job with Tiny Epics. And like I said, Pirates is, Pirates is coming, is here, and I will tell you about that at a future time.
Awesome.
And this is Gamelan Games, by the way, Tiny Epic Dinosaurs, and go check them out.
I love that. I love all that stuff. And you were mentioning, we had talked about when you're talking about Doom Imperium, having those games that are kind of easier for people. And I do subscribe to the subreddit that is board games. And this was an interesting one, because most of the times people are talking about whatever, about some of the more crunchier games that we know. But this post intrigued me because it says, learning all the words makes Scrabble boring to play. So I was like, interesting. I want you to read this and see what's going on with this. So the post came, and it came from someone named Haunting Tomatillo 202.
Tomatillo.
And they said, a few years ago, I was given the official Scrabble dictionary. I went through it and learned a bunch of unusual words. I started using those words. It did not go down well with the other players. Specifically, the word Awa, A-U-A, which is the Maori name for yellow mullet. Now, understandably, I was challenged for using a Maori word, so we opened up the dictionary, and there it is, a totally valid Scrabble word. Learning these words has ruined the game for me. Either the game becomes combative and devolves into an argument about the English language, or I have to deliberately play badly to avoid conflict. Either way, it's not so fun. Has anyone else had experience with Scrabble? And then a lot of people responded, and it was more along the lines of like, yeah, Scrabble is kind of an aspect to it. But then I realized that I've had to do this personally when I've been playing Magic the Gathering, because there's a power creep and you want to make, usually you want to make the most optimized deck you possibly can. But when you're playing at the kitchen table, you realize that there's going to be potentially a lower power level, and you're kind of sitting back, and I felt myself, you know, sitting back pulling my punches so everyone can have a quote-unquote fun time, and I'm not necessarily having a fun time myself. And so I kind of wanted to ask you guys how you felt about essentially like bringing yourself down to that level and how that affects all of you, because we're all gamers here.
First off, I thought you said like awa awa, like that noise that everyone's talking awa, about awa. Like that song awa awa.
No.
Anywho.
No.
I don't necessarily play dumb, but if I'm playing with somebody who has obviously, who may know how to play the game, but hasn't played it as much as I do, I will definitely point out when they do something that's not going to help them.
Okay.
It's like, for example, if I've played a game 100 times and Joe's only played it like a handful, be like, you know what, Joe? Maybe this move might be better for you to do this.
Okay.
So I'll definitely offer input, just so that way once he gets up to like the same level, I can have like a real good competitor. Like, okay.
That's kind of a good point with that. You're essentially kind of mentoring them to kind of raise them up to that level so you can actually play hard.
It's like playing a game, like, not to sound like a big shot or anything, but like when you're playing a game against a little kid, it's like,
yeah,
you're not going to like whoop their ass. Just,
I don't know. That teaches them character.
I don't know.
Helps them build character. At least that's what my dad said.
It's like if you dumb it down, it's kind of fun because there is that sense of competition. Like, oh, I dumbed it down enough. Now can I still win? Or could, like, how are they going to?
BJ, how do you feel about this?
Well, this is an age old question that I unfortunately had to really learn the hard way by really upsetting people to tears. Because I just played completely competitively with a group of people that wanted to play casually. And in the board game world now, you know, there's a maturation factor. No doubt about it, when we are getting more and more social, which is what the board game community has become, you have all sorts of people that are playing games, and they're playing games for their own reasons. And it is not a tournament. The first thing you look at is go, am I at a tournament? If I'm not at a tournament, then I am at a social situation. And I had to learn that because people are there to have fun. I'm there to have fun with my friends. And, you know, there's definitely different kinds of players. And this, in this particular instance, you know, it's not being a bad player by handicapping yourself. Because if you look at bowling, if you look at golf, you look at those sports I think of, it's no fun to play against somebody who's much better than you are. That's why they have the handicap system in place in the first place. You want to be competitive with me? All right, you're going to have to give me some points because I'm not as good as you. And then you have to work really hard and it gets interesting again. So I would have said to that guy, why would you go ahead and read that book and memorize everything? Are you ready for a Scrabble tournament? If you're not, what are you doing except trying to look like, oh, look at me, I'm a smart guy with all my friends?
And that was one of the posts, one of the commenters said, it's like, welcome to the second play, or the second way to play the game. There's the first one, which is casual, and then you've entered the tournament zone without necessarily knowing that you have done that. And then it becomes a totally different game because then you realize that Scrabble itself isn't a game about words, it's an area control game.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Even though she's a fictional character, you do not want to play chess with Beth from A Queen's Gambit. She will kick your ass.
Yeah.
And she won't care if she's kicking your ass because, again, she's ruthless and she's competitive. That's not how I need to play games with the people I'm around. Also, another thing, Rev, is that, you know, I've come to find out that if you are teaching a game, you probably shouldn't win the game. I didn't realize this because accidentally, you know, I'll know a game because I've learned it to teach it to others, and I'll end up maybe winning that game, and it really bums people out.
Yeah.
People just have this idea that the teacher is going to have an advantage, and they don't even believe you're trying to help them. And so now I'm of the mindset that when I play a game, I am not even trying to win. I am trying to help them understand the game so they can have fun with it so that we can play it again.
Solid, yeah.
Which is what I want. I want to bring this game back to the table, and the only way it's going to get back to the table is if everybody has a good experience.
That's a good call, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a nuance, and I hate to say it, but you know, not every gamer knows how to be socially adept.
Yeah.
And be tactful. And that's, so it's a big learning curve.
I think that's a big thing, too, to differentiate from is, are you playing a game or are you teaching a game? If you're teaching a game, I think you're 100% correct. You should generally let the other person win because they have to see how the game's supposed to be played and how you teach them, right? If you're playing a game, I think it's completely different. And this is where I get into a big argument with a lot of people. I go, why when I win is that all of a sudden me being competitive? Is it you not being able to win, meaning that you're the one being competitive? Because ideally, if you're the best player in a play group and you go into a game and you just play normally, you're not doing anything competitive. You're just playing the game.
You're just playing it, yeah.
But if everyone else gets angry at you, it's generally because they found out that they're no longer the best player at the game, and now they feel like they're being challenged and they can't win, which means that they're the ones really being competitive.
I will say, though, I like playfulness, like the playful competitiveness. It's like, seriously, you gave me another mandatory quest? All right, buddy.
Here we go.
It's on.
Oh, that's why I love playing with Josh and Sean, because Sean is that person. Sean will be in the game to lose, you know, just to screw someone over. And you go, how can you do this? Blah, blah, blah. And he goes, well, who's being competitive here?
and that's a good point. You guys bring this up, too, because I remember BJ was teaching me, I believe it was Lords of Waterdeep, or maybe it was,
Lords of Waterdeep, you damn.
So you remember because he was teaching me how to do it. And I gave him two mandatory quests in a row. He's like, well, you just caused me to lose the game. And it took me to realize, and I was looking at it, I was like, oh, yeah, that's pretty brutal. And it was one of those, again, it was a learning moment, but at the same point, to BJ's credit, you didn't get mad about it, but it was that, hey, this is what you did, and now I'm completely screwed. I was like, oh, sorry, buddy.
And it does, like, sometimes, depending, it really depends on the personality of who you're with. Because the first time I ever played Lords of Waterdeep, I looked at it, I'm like, oh my God, I don't know if my brain can comprehend all this, right? Which is now one of my favorite games. And I think I was playing with BJ, I think one of our buddies, Pete Greenberg, maybe our buddy Brandon Jerwa. It was a long time ago. And everyone kept giving me mandatory quests until I started realizing how the game worked. I'm like, so if I can do this, this, and this, right? And I just kept getting pissed. Like, stop it! Stop it! Until I finally figured out, okay, if I can complete this quest and I grab this little guy, I can go first and screw all you guys. And I think I won. It's my first time ever, but just because I got so mad.
It seems like when everyone's doing it at that point, it's just a meme.
They're just trolling me. Which I was just like, I'm trying to learn and you're trolling me?
it would be nice also, and again, people don't trust you when you say you're trying to help them.
Yeah.
I had somebody yell at me and go, you know what? Somebody was berating me the entire game and said, I can't believe you picked what you picked, and I can't believe you're going to win, and you're obviously you have the greatest power in the world. And I kept looking at them and telling them, you need to finish the game. I'm telling you what you think is going to happen isn't going to happen. And up until the last turn, this person berated me. Mm-hmm. And then on their last turn, they were like, oh, wow, I can actually take you from first place and put you in third place. I'm like, yeah, you finally realize how your guy works. It's balanced. I go, have you noticed my special power? I haven't been using it for the last five turns because I peter out in the late game. That's what I do. That's why I took this guy. I said, because this guy has never won. I go, I specifically took a character that I've never been able to win with, figuring I'll give you the ones I've seen other people win with, but they just don't believe you're being that nice.
Yeah.
And so it goes both ways.
Yeah, I think at that point it's just all about being a little patient. If you're the person learning, or if you are, or maybe not at the higher power level, and then also being patient as the person who may be of a higher power level than other people.
Quick note, play the main game. Don't play the game with the attachments as well or any of the add-ons.
Would be expansion, son.
Yes, okay. Start off without the attachments or the expansions, yes, and play the base game.
Try telling Josh that. That's a big problem we have, and Joey, I've just basically said, we're going to play the main game, and he's like, what do you mean? What about all? I go, I want to play this more than once, and this will incentivize incentivize us to play it again after we play the main game. Because you're right, Joey. A lot of times it's just a lot. Some games you can go, okay, it's really smooth, but... Yeah, that's it. Just overwhelms everybody when you go, and then we'll do this, and we'll do this, and we'll do this. It's like, yeah.
May have happened to me.
I can tell. But yeah, everybody out there, have fun playing your games. That's what it's really about. I mean, obviously, if you're in a tournament situation, that is a different animal in itself. But have some fun playing your games, and then you can play them again with those people that you like to play with. But now we need to stop talking about games and get to...
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
All right, Vicky, what does Monday hold for us?
Well, on Friday, my Geek Sheet was about separating the actors from their performance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found this tweet. It made me laugh. It's about at Ben H. Winters, who I believe is a writer, says, if you ever loved a book by a living author and thought, hey, I ought to write that author a nice email or letter, etc., and then you thought, nah, that's weird, you should totally do it. Odds are your favorite is a fragile, anxious creature who will feast on your love.
I think as people in the creative industry, feedback is super big. And it's one of those things where even if it's someone that we've talked to or someone who listens to us and they're happy to have mm-hmm. done so, that it makes you feel really, really good.
Right. It's not weird. I mean, if you make it weird, it's like, I want to smell your socks. I mean, Whoa. There's a time and place for things, man. And, you know, a comment is not.
Wait, that's wrong?
That sounds oddly specific, Vicky.
Don't worry about it.
All right.
actually, I did have a friend who, when she was sick, she had a lot of free time. So she would write to all these authors she really liked. Just, you know, hey, can I just have like a little nameplate, just your autograph, or just even ask like, for whatever, just some correspondence, and the amount of letters she got back. Like, I think she even got a bunch from, Tolkien's son?
Oh, wow.
So she got a couple of signed placards or little cards from him.
That's amazing.
Dear George R.R. Martin, can we have another book, please?
Can we please finish the books? Have you, BJ or Joe, have you guys ever reached out to an artist or an author or anything like that? Because I remember one of the times that I did, and this is kind of a cautionary tale. I really love the art of Tony Detralizzi, who started off
Tony D.
Yeah, he started off as a Dungeons & Dragons illustrator, artist, and moved to Magic cards, and that's where I found him. So I was collecting all of his cards, and I loved him. I really, really did love him. And I found out that you could send him cards, and he would sign them. Well, me being an over-enthusiastic, not really knowing how everything works kid, I mailed him a stack of like 100 cards. The worst part was I didn't give him any return postage.
No.
And he was cool enough to like send them back. And even he wrote me and he said, it's like, you know, usually, you want to be able to, you know, send the return postage to, you know, help out these guys because you don't know how much. Yeah, it costs money. You don't know how much an artist is making. And even if they're working on a gigantic game that you love like Magic, you just don't know where they're at. Fortunately, he was nice enough to give me a little bit of a life lesson, and I got my cards back. So it was really sweet.
Well, you are really lucky you got your cards back.
Super lucky. Super lucky. He was a very nice guy.
So this was back when social media and the internet was just starting out. So early 2000s, I followed this artist. She created this comic, which I'm sure at this point in her life, she's like, I'd rather not call it by that name anymore. It was called The Fart Party. And her name is Julia Wirtz. She was from San Francisco, moved to New York, and it was basically one of those web comics where she would just, you know, talk about her life and funny interactions she had with her mom or her brother. And I loved reading them, and that's kind of where I got my obsession with web comics for a while. And I remember she did a thing where she's like, hey, if you send me money, I'll send you buttons for your dumb shirt.
Aww.
And so I sent her $2 in the mail, and I got two pins, which I still own. They were stuck to like a sweater or something, and that went through the wash and the dryer, so you could see the kind of burn marks on the edge of it.
Yeah.
But just the fact that she sent them back, and I still follow her. I think I'm friends with her on Facebook. Like,
that's amazing.
Not that I talk to her or am friends with her, but it's like,
but you're friends on Facebook.
Hi. And just seeing how she's grown as an artist and like where her life is now. And she'll sometimes bring up the fart party. She's like, yes. You know, it's a, like she'll still draw in that same style and do similar things, but she doesn't call it that anymore.
Yeah, the fart party's over, everybody.
No, but I think there might, the website may still be up and you could read all her series, but I really, that was one of my first favorite fan moments I've ever had.
Joe, you got anything?
You know, I don't think I ever did.
Oh.
I was a shy kid.
Yeah.
So for me, walking up maybe at a Magic tournament just to ask for a signature on a card was as high as I ever got on that kind of thing.
I did that a couple times too, though, and that was super fun to do. BJ, did you ever have any of those super fan moments?
Well, you know, it's funny. Recently, I was just surprised that somebody got back to me, but that's the beauty of social networking. I have for years, you know, made contact and wrote letters and whatever, and they never got printed and nothing ever got said. But I remember just going on Twitter talking about how much I was a fan of Dan Slott, who was writing for Spider-Man at the time,
yeah.
And now he's writing for Fantastic Four. And I just basically said something like, well, thank you, Dan. My wife thought that this comic book craze was over when I took a break, and now because of your writing, I'm getting everything you've ever done. And he just gave back a smile. He goes, sorry, man, I really don't mean to break up marriages. I just want to write good stuff. But I was like, oh, that was kind of cool that there was a response back. And, you know, I thought that's the cool thing about social networking is that the guy whose work I liked, I was able to get a good response back.
Aww.
Never really happened a whole lot, probably because I don't know if my fan mail got lost or it wasn't as good as anybody else's. I never got printed. You know, I wanted to see it in the Marvel.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the bulletins page and stuff like that. I just wanted to see it and just never saw it. I was like, ah, dang it.
Well, and it's a good thing, I mean, right now that we have the social media in terms of, like, not being a pain in the ass. Like, if you're a nice person, you're going to get responses. And even a joking thing like that, you had some fun with it. He had some fun with it. It's, you got to, obey Will Wheaton's rules. Don't be a D. And
right.
Go out there and embrace and have some fun with the artists that create the stuff that you love.
Well, until next time, guys, stay nerdy.